USAA knows dynamic duos can save the day, like superheroes and sidekicks or auto and home insurance. With USAA, you can bundle your auto and home and save up to 10%. Tap the banner to learn more and get a quote at usaa.com/bundle. Restrictions apply.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today on the podcast, it is all about The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills Season 14, which just wrapped on Tuesday. To help me break it all down is Sarah Galley, who is the host of the Andy Girls podcast, which is great. I've been on it many times, and it was about time that I had Sarah back on the show. So Sarah really knows her housewife shit, and we had a really good discussion because there were a couple debates in there, and there were a couple things where there were a couple things that I said that she was like, I'm not sure about that. And then in her rebuttals, sometimes I was convinced, sometimes I wasn't. So again, and as you'll hear her talk about this, but like, we love a healthy debate and disagreement when it comes to Bravo and Real Housewives, because that is kind of rare to experience online. So I hope that you enjoy our conversation today, which again, involves some debate, which I think makes for good listening, honestly. But before we get to that, and I will talk about my thoughts on the Valley premiere and Summer House this week, because there's so much to talk about with those two things, but I want that to be its own episode. And this is already over an hour long, this episode, so I didn't want to cram it in here too. So I will give those two shows their due early next week. I also have an interview coming up with one of the new Real Housewives of Atlanta that I taped on Wednesday, which I'm really excited about. But before we get to the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills end of season deep dive about season 14, I do have to acknowledge, again, most of the Valley chat will be saved for early next week, but I have to acknowledge, Gabbing with Gib was featured on the season 2 premiere of the Valley. And I have been teasing a little bit like that you might see a familiar face on the premiere of the Valley. And that was yours truly. So I'll give you the quick story here. Last May or June, I had Janet on the podcast towards the end of the first season of the Valley. And I never met Janet. And the way it works, just by the way, like I basically tell the reps for shows on Bravo, like each show has like a couple of PR reps, basically that handle access to talent for interviews and things. And I basically make it known, like I will talk to anybody. I will take any interviews. If people have openings in their media days, I will fill those openings and I will have them on my show. And that's kind of how it works. Like I don't specifically request certain people. So Janet was available and I jumped at the chance and we had a really great connection. We had a good conversation. I do think that Janet's a little bit misunderstood on the Valley. And I think that, you know, she's been feuding with Kristen obviously since the first season. And, you know, she was opening herself up to criticism and also to people not liking her. I think not completely because of this, but I think partially when you're coming at somebody like Kristen, who, you know, she's kind of like risen from the ashes and she's kind of like the people's princess in a lot of ways in this little world of the Valley, that's automatically going to put you at odds with a lot of the audience. And she's also done things obviously on the show that have kind of irked a lot of people. And that's, I get that. But I do think that there are elements of Janet that make her misunderstood. Anyway, I'm not going to go off on that because again, I'm saving most of my thoughts and opinions for later. But anyway, I really liked my conversation with her. And in a clip that I posted from that interview at the time on social media to promote the interview on the podcast, she mentioned this comment that Zach and Kristen had not wanted her pregnancy to come to full term. And in all honesty, during the recording of the interview, you know, I didn't fully like clock the sort of weight of what she had said, you know? So like, that's why I didn't really like follow up on it as much, because like, it didn't really hit me what she was saying, honestly, in the time, because it was such a, you know, that's a shocking thing. You know, that's a shocking claim. That's a shocking thing to want about somebody's unborn child. So she said that, and it caused a lot of social media drama once I posted the clip. And there was a bunch of comments going back and forth on social media. And actually, Zach was supposed to come on my podcast right after that to respond. And then he pulled out. So I say that to say that, like, everybody on that show, honestly, except for Jax, I don't need Jax on my podcast. Other than him, anybody on that show is welcome to come on my podcast to share their side of any story. That is all I want. When I started this podcast a year and a half ago, that's all I really set out to do, which is like to create a space where talent from these shows can come on and we can have pretty good conversations. They can share their side of whatever's going on the shows or outside of the shows or whatever they want. And I'm sort of the sounding board for that. I'm the person to ask the questions. And I don't always ask the right questions. I don't always, you know, get the answers that I want. But that's my goal. And I think with Janet sharing that, she felt safe with me to share that. And, you know, again, Zach and Kristen, if they would want to respond to that, they're more than welcome to come on Gabbing with Gabe. And I would love to chat with them. I've historically been a big Kristen fan. And I actually interviewed her twice for my job back at AOL when I started my career. And so anyway, that caused a lot of drama. And that was sort of the last of that, sort of petered out after that week, I would say, or so I thought. I didn't know what was going on when the Valley picked cameras back up a couple weeks later, probably a month or two, maybe like a month later, 2 months later. And I think it was in the fall that somebody from one of the production companies that works on the Valley reached out and they were like, hey, we'd love clearance to feature a clip from Gabbing with Gib on the upcoming season of the Valley. And I was like, whoa. And the way it works is like you basically sign over the rights to a specific portion of the episode and you aren't sure exactly what they're going to use from that portion. And you're not sure if it's going to be audio or visual or a combo of both. I gave them rights to the cover art to also use. And I also gave them the video. And so I had no idea how it was going to be featured. And I got a tip off from somebody who works at Bravo a couple months ago who had seen the early incarnation of the screener that it was going to be featured in the premiere. And I had no idea it was going to be the premiere. So that was wild to find out. And then I would say like a month ago or a couple weeks ago, I got to see the final version of the screener. And I saw it and I was like, oh my God, like this is full screen, full thumbnail. You can see my face, you can see my name, you can see the logo of my podcast. And like when I signed over the clearance to it, I was just like, that was the first time that's ever been requested of me. Actually, for season two of Summer House, Martha's Vineyard, we were reached out to, I worked at Yahoo at the time and I interviewed Preston. And they did reach out about using a portion of my interview with Preston, but it never got featured. So this is the first time that my podcast or anything that I've really worked on has ever been featured directly on Bravo. And so it's really a big deal for me because it's like, one, it's amazing exposure for my show. It is like that's free promotion. And it's also going to be in a flashback on episode two. So it's going to be featured twice. And it's just, it's exciting because it means that I've created that space for talent at Bravo to feel comfortable talking to me and to share their truth. And that was Janet's truth, whether you agree with it or not. And like, it wasn't just featured, but like it's driving what is kind of one of the central conflicts of season two at the beginning here. So like we're part of the drama, you guys, which again, this is not why I do it, but it's kind of wild. It really is. And I know that we're kind of tired of drama between people on Bravo shows starting on podcasts, but you know what? I'll take this one. I'm not going to complain about this one. And I do have to shout out friend of the podcast, Brian Moylan, who in his recap of The Valley for Vulture, he wrote, Kristen and Zach are mad about something that Janet said on a podcast hosted by my friend, part-time Speedo model, Gibson Johns. And he and he linked to an Instagram that I posted last summer of myself in a Speedo. Brian, never change. And thank you for the shout out. Thank you for the lovely new title, part-time Speedo wearer. And I also need to say, you guys, so I don't listen to Radio Andy in real time because I don't pay for Sirius XM, but I do listen to the podcast version, which again, because I don't pay for, I'll have to listen to like highlight it. Basically the podcast version basically rounds up highlights from each day's episode. And you listen to it a week late because I don't pay for it. I get them a week late after they're put back from behind a paywall. Anyway, he was recently talking about in last week's episode that I listened to that he got a DM from Rihanna. And Rihanna DM'd him saying, when's the Valley coming back? How long do I have to wait until the Valley? And so now I know that Rihanna watches the Valley, which by transitive property means that Rihanna has seen my face. Rihanna has spent 5 seconds looking at my face. And you know what? That's a fucking win if I've ever heard one. Deadass, that is a win. Woo! And yeah, it was exciting. And I've heard from so many people who were just really excited about the exposure, about the moment. And thank you all for reaching out and sending photos of your TV screens with it out there. I reposted a bunch of them and it was an exciting moment. And again, I know that it's not like obviously the most positive, you know, celebratory topic matter. Of course, it's very sensitive and it's very serious. And it's a big claim that Janet made and that she's mostly standing by, other than bringing Kristen into it. She's standing by the Zach comment. And yeah, but I still think that I can celebrate it as a sort of a career milestone of being featured on Bravo, the network that I talk about every single week, you know? And I've spent years and years and years doing this. So it was just really exciting. And I wanted to share with you guys just sort of a little bit how it worked. And again, I hope to have anybody from the Valley on the show this season. I think it's going to be a really wild, wild season. It's going to be a wild ride. And I'm very much looking forward to it. Again, I will share more of my thoughts on the Valley premiere and the latest Summer House stuff early next week on Gabbing with Gib. Yeah, that's it. I wanted to peel back the curtain a little bit on how the logo, how my face ended up on the Valley premiere, which is, again, crazy. And then also, last thing I'll say up here, not related to this and not related to Beverly Hills or Summer House, is there have been a bunch of rumors this week that Meredith Marks was like suspended from the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, which is currently filming season 6, for like going off on Britney on a flight back from Bermuda or something. That was sort of running rampant on the Bravo social media accounts. And I was actually messaged direct messages about this that were purportedly from somebody close to the show claiming that this was true. But Bryce Sander, another friend of the podcast who works at Entertainment Tonight, he is the Bravo guy when it comes to honestly a lot of things. He tweeted, I don't know where this got started, but I've been told Meredith Marks was not suspended from the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City filming. So in case you're a Meredith guy like myself, and you were worried about those rumors, those are apparently not true. So wanted to quell some of that too. So yeah, that is that. Keep listening for my end of season deep dive for The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills season 14 with Sarah Galley, the host of Andy's Girls. Check out Andy's Girls wherever you get your podcasts. And please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. I've definitely been feeling the love this week, but I wouldn't mind feeling a little more. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you several times next week.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
I want to gab.
We heard you. 9 years of Bring Back the Snack Wrap, and you've won. But maybe you should have asked for more. Say hello to the Hot Honey Snack Wrap. Now you've really won. Go to McDonald's and get it while you can.
Today we're gabbing with Sarah Galley, host of the Andy's Girls podcast. It has been a little too long since Sarah has been on the show, but she is here for a big one. It is our end of season deep dive for The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. We just saw part 3 of the reunion last night. Sarah, my uptown girl, how are you?
I'm okay. I am hanging in. It's been, you know, it's been a rough 12 to 24 hours for those of us who have anointed Garcelle, our queen and savior. So it's been a journey, but we are both survivors.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited to be here and to dive in.
We're definitely survivors. And you know what? Like, I honestly, maybe we just start with Garcelle because I love Garcelle, and that's not a secret. I've always really just gravitated towards her since her time on the show. I think this is definitely her worst season, and I am going to miss her on the show, but I also met I'm pretty much at peace with her decision to take herself out of the equation after this season. You know what I mean? That's sort of where I've landed right now.
I am 100%. The thing about it being Garcelle's worst season is I don't know how to like compute that in my mind, because sometimes when I hear worst season, I think like worst person. And I know that's not your argument at all.
Yeah.
But just in terms of worst season, what does that mean? That she wasn't engaged enough in conflict? She didn't feel like as much a part of the show? I want to understand that a little bit
more.
Yeah,
for me, it's one was part of it is like the I saw the audience turning on her a lot. Like it seemed like the conversation around her was very negative. And I think a lot of that seemed to be based on, again, I don't really agree with this, but her quote unquote not sharing a lot. And it, I think that's more reflection of just like where her life was, which was like it's pretty settled in terms of like, her career is going well. She has the beach house. She has the grandkid. Like, it's all going pretty swimmingly for Garcelle, you know, in terms of the so there's not big drama for her to contribute to the show. And I also think that people are kind of, I think people were kind of fed up with her asking the questions, but then sort of like not bringing the heat in the moment always in terms of her true opinions on things and saving it for confessional. So that's sort of what I think the way that she approached Housewives was kind of grating on some people. That's sort of maybe what it boils down to. Perhaps.
Grading in what way?
It's sort of the same way that Sutton's is, where it's like it's similar to what we've seen from her for the past four seasons kind of thing.
Okay. I mean,
I'm not saying that that's necessarily my opinion.
No.
That
yeah.
seems to be, I think, sort of not the consensus. I think that's the view of a good amount of the viewership, I would say.
I definitely have heard that from AGs, from Andy Scroll's listeners. And it's one of those things where when it comes to Garcelle not sharing, I am super open. You know, I love my favorite episodes of Andy's Girls are when people come on and have an absolutely opposite opposing opinion than I do, because I think that's more interesting.
Totally.
It's more interesting for me, 9 million episodes mm-hmm. in. It's more interesting, I think, for the listeners. And so the refrain that I always say is like, A, normalize, change your mind based on new information, but also
exactly.
be able to exist in discomfort where someone says something you don't agree with and not have your instinctive response be, well, A, you're wrong, or B, I can't listen to this because I so believe the opposite. Like we've kind of lost that.
Absolutely.
At points as, you know, members of the Bravo community and as Bravo, you know, super fans. But with Garcelle not sharing, I don't know why that's kind of the thing that sticks with me in a way that I just genuinely don't understand. Like, what is she not sharing? Is the problem that she didn't go through her divorce on camera? Like, it can't be the cast sort of disbelieving that she's not dating because we haven't seen Erica and she's told us she's fucking. So it's like, what is that? Is that yeah. not sharing her opinion in real time?
Yeah, I think that is maybe part of it. I actually think for the cast in particular, I think it's really heightened by the fact that most of them have taken their turns in the hot seat in a group setting almost for a full season at this point, right? Erica's done it, Dorit's done it, Kyle's done it. Sutton kind of perpetually in and out of that position in terms of like taking it from the group. And Garcelle hasn't really been through that until maybe this season where she had a couple of moments, I think, particularly at the reunion, honestly. And I think that's heightened by that. And the reason why she's never really been in the center like that and sort of taken the heat from all sides is because she hasn't had a scandal. She hasn't had a controversy. And I think that it's almost like this sort of, it's more their problem than hers. It's projection in a lot of ways. But I think that that feeling that like, well, Garcelle, like she's never had to go through what we've had to go through. You know what I mean? I think that that's also why her exiting the reunion in the way that she did didn't land for them either, because it's like, well, that was nothing compared to what we've been through, which I see and I don't see. You know, I think that differentiator is what heightens it.
I think also there's such a double-edged sword to Garcelle not needing the show.
Totally.
Because in the grand scheme of things, she doesn't need the show. That's great for Garcelle. In the short term, for a segment of the Bravo audience and the majority of the cast, so many of them depend, the irony like of Diamonds and Rosé franchise, like they all live check paycheck to paycheck, albeit exorbitant, you know, amounts. But they need the show. Mm-hmm. Erica Jayne needs the show in
order to Dorit. Yep.
And absolutely Dorit. And Kyle doesn't need it, but so much of her success is tied to her history on Bravo. But it's a totally different world because her money is like crazy. And obviously we know Sutton's. But also it's not just about the money. It's about the present value in terms of fame. And Garcelle has done an incredible job of growing her brand, but she was a celebrity before joining and is leaving in an incredible place. I wonder how much of that factors into maybe negative criticism around Garcelle.
A little bit of jealousy in terms of, again, her not eating that show. And I think we see it manifest with like Jennifer Tilly, more so with Kathy and sort of like a sucking up thing where, but like throughout the season, like how many times was Erica saying like, oh my God, like Jennifer Tilly's like, you know, $30,000 Louis Vuitton boat bag, or, oh my God, that's like, there's like a sucking up to them, but Garcelle didn't really get that treatment from them, you know, in terms of not needing it. And because theirs is like strictly financial versus like career and sort of relevancy perspective. I'm curious what you think about when you think about her reunion performance. I can't remember a performance like this on a reunion for a while where it's like you almost saw it in her eyes, like she had checked out from not just from the reunion that day, from the show completely. Like after that lunch break, she came back and she wasn't there. It almost looked like she was going to cry half the time, honestly. And they kept cutting to her a lot to sort of hammer home that she was about to walk off. What did you make of her, Garcelle, at the reunion?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. It felt like she was quiet quitting. Like we saw it in her eyes. We obviously had the benefit of knowing that she seemingly quit the show immediately following. We saw her quit on camera, but it wasn't, she voiced her feelings of hurt halfway through part three, but we knew from part one. We saw her, I think, shut down. Like she would say something and then just immediately be like, okay, got it. She wasn't engaging and we understand why. Because I think she felt like there's such a target on my back, number one. I think she felt that it was overly strategic. She said as much in the closing minutes of the episode, these are not my friends. And also she didn't feel, as she said, like they were giving me grace and she didn't feel any affection from them. Mm-hmm. And if you're going into this position where like, yeah, at the tail end, you're pretending that you're friends, but a lot of it is a real tussle and she feels like she has nobody really on her side, or even regardless of like Sutton's LOL, they are genuinely coming for her and not hearing her when she apologizes or not believing that her apology either is true or is enough. I felt very connected to the hurt that I saw in her eyes. And I really genuinely felt badly for her. I really genuinely did.
I felt bad for her completely. I historically love Garcelle. I did feel a little bit of confliction in myself because I want to get to the Sutton portion of it after this. But like when Garcelle was like, you know, I didn't get any smiles from anybody all day. But it's like when she was asked if she had smiled at anybody, she said, not since the beginning. And she said they hadn't smiled at her since the beginning. So it's kind of like, I don't know. Like, I don't know why she, on the one hand, I understand it. On the other, I'm like, I don't know why you expected to like be treated with a smile when you're questioning the robbery, when you're questioning Kyle's sexuality, when you're sort of, I don't think she fully expressed this feeling that she was having in a way that I fully understood it, to be honest. And in terms of how it related to like how she was talking to everybody else.
I hear that.
Let's talk about it.
I hear that, but I also feel like she had this one, to some of us, clear-eyed moment where she said, I just don't feel like I have received the grace of everyone else. I don't feel like I've been treated the same way as other members of the cast. And Kyle immediately interjected and challenged that. And it's like,
totally. And that was,
why couldn't she just have the feeling? Like, we don't have to understand it to believe that it exists. Mm-hmm. Although I do sidebar understand it. The rest of the cast, it felt so performative, or maybe just true, that they just didn't care to understand.
Totally.
That's the whole thing. They just didn't care. There isn't a lot of curiosity about Garcelle unless it comes from a negative place.
That's
and
valid.
I don't mean specific to the audience. I mean specific to the cast. And I think we saw it. I think we just saw it.
Yeah.
And I also think Garcelle not responding, Garcelle and Sutton, by the way, who we'll get to, but we're talking specifically about Garcelle. The reunion felt lopsided as a result, because Dorit was at a 75. Erica was ready to be as bitchy as she could possibly be. Kyle had stuff, which was wild. Who am I missing? And then we have friends
Bose too.
Bose, 100%. Bose didn't engage with Garcelle as much. And also, it's her first season. So I'm not like criticizing Bose. Yeah, because also the history of this is like bringing so much down when it comes to prior histories.
Totally.
It didn't help matters that Garcelle seemingly like genuinely had already exited the show in her mind. But also it showed the weaknesses of the franchise, that if you are just simply isolating and there really genuinely is no friendship here as a collective, then while I would have been more entertained had I seen Garcelle respond, had I seen Sutton respond, but it showed the flaws kind of in the system of Beverly Hills, which is not a bad thing if production is paying attention.
Right. And Garcelle didn't need to respond because he doesn't need the show. And I think adding to the hurt, and this is more the part that I do understand from Garcelle, and I don't know if I don't think this was expressed at all because she didn't want to on camera. I think the Sutton portion of it is actually a big portion of it, because I don't think Sutton stuck up for Garcelle at all on this reunion. And she kind of went silent because I think that she sensed that Garcelle was sort of one foot out the door while they were taping. And she, you know, we know that Sutton, one of her sort of core insecurities and wants is to be accepted by the cool girls. And I think that she didn't want to sort of go down with the ship, quote unquote, with Garcelle, with her main ally going out the door, you know? And so I think that Garcelle was actually kind of hurt by Sutton, who, when it comes down to it, the very end during the toast says that her biggest learning from the season is that like her and Erica had some fun moments together. And it's like, really? Like that's what you're going to go with? And that to me signals that Sutton was, this is sort of like her soft olive branch for next season, so that she's not completely isolated. Like you said, the isolation, because if you think about it, think about last season's reunion, honestly, is like, Sutton like almost passed out and Garcelle left to go to the hospital with her. Like that, Garcelle was a very good friend to Sutton. And I think that she felt hurt by Sutton during this whole day of filming, personally.
Yeah. I don't know how you go through this season of BH being Sutton struck and not thinking so much of the core of the season and your storyline was the trip to Augusta.
Exactly.
And I think during those days, Garcelle and Kyle were really good friends to her and a really good support system. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know how you acknowledge it unless you have realized in your mind, or maybe not, but like exactly as you said, she strategically was thinking, what will help me move forward? Mm-hmm. And she either took Garcelle for granted or just felt like, I'm just going to do as much as I possibly can to suck up to Erica and, like, as you said, extend the olive branch. And I mean, listen, I would be shocked. And I've been wrong so many times before. I would be shocked if we see a new brunch picture with Garcelle and Sutton put on social anytime soon. I would be shocked.
Yeah, because I remember around the time that Garcelle made her announcement, like a lot of the speculation was like, did something go down between Sutton and Garcelle at the reunion? Because there were a lot of clues. There's a lot of smoke around that feeling, you know, in terms of the delayed reaction, the really simple caption that, like, you can read into these things or you cannot. But to me, they do signal certain things. And if they had an amazing reunion together, Sutton's reaction to Garcelle leaving the show and Garcelle's reaction to that reaction would have been so much more effusive, so much more gushing. And there's an awkwardness between them right now. Garcelle stormed out, but they were supposed to get supper, you know? And so it's like, and that's kind of what Sutton deserved from Garcelle. Like, Sutton didn't give her much during the reunion. So Garcelle is paying her dust on her way out.
Yeah, best of luck to her. Best of luck to Jennifer Tilly next season. It's going to be it. I hope it's not more of the same, but there is something so off about the structure of Beverly Hills, I think, since the tail end of Lisa Rinna,
right,
that hasn't really been righted. And Bo's is one of the best examples of like next generation housewives casting of someone who's come in where it's not about being a spiritual OG like Dorinda. To me, it's just like this is a classic housewife who immediately works. But even noting that if we can't figure out a way to change the structure of the show, if they did a great job of casting and added like one or two more housewives, but the system, like the cast system of Beverly Hills is still set up in the same way, I don't know how we're going to get out of this.
I mean, we can just go there now and then go circle back to the other ladies. If we're on this beat, how would you do that? How would you do that for next season? How would you break up that structure?
I think there needs to be, I don't know if it's a production change that needs to happen and or a huge casting adjustment, but there is something that exists. And it's like, it's so weird that I keep thinking about Lisa Rinna in my head, but I do feel like there's a stain that she left in how well she was able to train housewives to treat the show like she did, that feels just so inauthentic. And I've always been the person who raises my hand and says, I never have great casting ideas. I am one of those people who can challenge the current environment and say, this isn't working and that's not working. But I don't work in television production. So I don't know the ins and outs of what it means to potentially make a significant change.
Yeah.
But something needs to happen. Like, and I think maybe that will come naturally because Kyle does not want to be on the show anymore. She really doesn't. She hasn't for a minute. I think she's tired of it. It's tired of her. So maybe that changing, if it does, could lead to some sort of major ensemble shift. And I'm not blaming Kyle for the entirety of the problem. Kyle's in my top five. I die for Kyle. I love Kyle to bits.
I love Kyle as well.
She's a problem on the show.
Yeah. Yeah. She's holding it back. She's holding it back.
She's not the only reason, but I feel like maybe there could be a shift there if we have a little bit of a new beginning.
Yeah. It's sort of like, I think the problem started when Lisa Vanderpump left, and then Kyle, who is more of a beta, was left to lead the show. But then Lisa Rinna, who's more of an alpha, but it's a little bit more inauthentic. And so then when she gets pulled out, Kyle sort of left with this, it's kind of like a burden for her that to carry, and she's not necessarily equipped to be that leader in some ways. In some ways she is, in some ways she's very much not, especially if she's not going to be open about everything in her life. And so it's this sort of perfect storm of like, okay, this is a little broken or a lot broken.
Yeah. And I just kind of think, you know, I'm just kind of like thinking out loud of what has worked for existing Housewives franchises. I don't know what's happened behind the scenes with Atlanta, but I do consider like the Cast Off reboot to be a big success because the energy on the show feels fresh and new. And I know we're going through some shit right now, but it does feel...
No, it still feels fresh.
It still feels fresh. It still feels new. And at points, really fun. I think about Salt Lake City post-Jen Shah. They've done a tremendous job. I think about Orange County.
Oh, see, yeah.
Like, last season of Orange County had me by the throat the every single second of every single minute of every single episode. I will think of that season. I honestly like couldn't even rewatch it because it brought me so much joy the first time that I would be let down, like knowing what's going to happen, but I'm sure I would not be let down at all. So how do you apply that to Beverly Hills? Is it a casting thing alone? Like what happened behind the scenes in Atlanta, in Salt Lake City, in Orange County? Or was it simply just having some sort of come to Jesus conversation with the cast by changing the cast?
Yeah. I mean, I think the answer is the Atlanta OC semi-Potomac even model where you like you keep some core people, you bring a person or two back and you add some exciting new people. And I think that Beverly Hills, I mean, they have that has to be doable for a city like Los Angeles, where it's like there's probably a long list of people who are just waiting to get on the show. And there are several people connected to the show that I think would work. So that's, I think, the answer personally. And I think you take Kyle out, then you stop holding it back. You force Dorit and Erica to see what life is like on the show without Kyle Richards. You know, you see what, I don't know. I think that there's a lot. That's kind of one of the keys, I think.
Yeah. And I think I'm in the minority on this, but I really liked the season as a whole. Like, I found a lot.
I didn't dislike it either.
Yeah. I found a lot on Andy's Girls. We talk about the psychology behind the housewives, and I found a lot that I was like curious to unpack. But now I kind of feel like in my head, the casting obviously is huge, is integral, but also like, is there going to be a point where there's a conversation with Erica where someone says to her, as great as it is to watch paint dry, and like quite literally, and as solid as she was as a cast member, she really was until the reunion when she absolutely lost
totally
me.
Agree.
If you stay on the show, we actually do need to have people ask you about Tom. We do need to have some sort of content here about the lawsuits.
I think that's going backwards, isn't it?
But that's where Erica is in her life. We're not allowed to talk about the fact that she's in huge financial, legal trouble after the sentencing.
I just still think it represents going backwards in some ways for the show, and to be sort of like weighed down by more of that, which I know people want that out of her so she doesn't get to kind of fly by scot-free, but I don't think people actually want to watch that. I don't think.
Well, then that's a casting Erica problem. That's not an audience. Don't show it to us. That's the issue with having Erica on the show and it being about her real life and not showing.
Yeah, that's true. I would take the Erica we got this season 10 times personally, but I understand that for sure.
I would take the Erica that we had this season until we get to the reunion and Andy asks in the most softball of ways, Erica, can you now say that Tom was guilty? And Erica says, well, it's not my opinion anyone cares about. He doesn't push back at all. And no one acknowledges that the show isn't about Tom, but it is about his estranged wife. Like, we should care if she thinks that Tom was guilty. We should care that she's never said that out loud after making that her screaming headline when she was at her lowest. Like, that does matter that we've never heard it.
Yeah. And I had this woman, Liz Bentley, on my show last week, and she was talking about a big problem that she has with Beverly Hills, which ties up into this, which is like, there is no voice of the people, person to challenge the sort of authorities that be on this show right now. Like, there's no person who in that moment would have said on that stage, okay, well, Erica, what about XYZ? Which I told, for some reason, Garcelle and Sutton will do it in the confessionals and sometimes at like a big group dinner, but then Sutton usually ultimately cowers, to be honest. But there was nobody there to Andy was there, but he didn't do it. So like, who on the cast? It's a problem. There's nobody on the cast to do that personally, like, because that's, I don't know. I don't know if that's an alliance thing. I don't know if that's a, I don't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole thing anymore. Like, I don't know, but that's an issue for sure. For sure.
Yeah. And Erica really had me until the reunion, but she lost me in such a significant way that it's tough because we've seen these moments on previous seasons where it feels like, she and Sutton are working on things. And then we get to the reunion and she goes, I was lying on your ass. Like, I was performing. That was a lie. That wasn't real. And then we have these moments on the reunion where she just goes out of her way to be so bitchy.
Yeah.
Because of a vendetta that she then says doesn't exist. Like, you're just not that interesting. It landed with such a thud for me because I was like, what was the reason for that? Why did you say it and then just kind of pretend that it didn't happen? Like, that's when I lose Erica, because then I'm like, oh, none of this is real. Like, is she just performing these moments where she seems calm and interested and nice, or is she just... And the reverse is true, that she really is just that cold and severe, or she might just be really complicated, but she's added in this like nastiness that she pretends is entertainment, that it's tough. It can be tough.
It's a nastiness that we had like seen before, but not for a while. And like, while in season, she was like this like cunty in a good way kind of energy and like a way that like we first fell in love with her, honestly. To me, it was like when she started, it was like the very end of the season. That Watch What Happens Live appearance after the finale was crazy. Yeah, it turns into mean territory where you're just like, where's the smoke coming from? Because like, I thought we were like, I thought it wasn't that serious, you know? And I agree. I do.
I think the difficulty is like, I so hear you on the like, we can't go back to those like very uncomfortable moments at you know, with all things Tom when news was breaking. Like, I genuinely understand that. But I also think it's so hard with Erica because I think a lot of the reason that people like her is because of her past.
Yeah.
Like, is because of her past personality. And if she is changing and evolving, because she's telling us the same reunion cycle where she says that to Garcelle, which to me came like really out of nowhere. And then she later says, you know, but that's why I've softened and you don't see that kind of cruelty anymore. And I'm like, literally, what's happening? But with Erica, I just kind of, it's tough because I don't know who she is. And in moments where she lets down her guard, there is so much cruelty that's involved that like that Watch What Happens where I just think, man, you're actually really well served by being on a tightly edited and controlled quote unquote ensemble show. Because when it's just you, it's you and a new cast member on that stage, it doesn't really go all that great. You feel a lot. Erica's energy just feels really heavy. But like, maybe there's reason for the heaviness because of all the stuff she's going through. But if we can't see that, mm-hmm. and if people can't challenge what she still continues to hide, I don't know. It feels yeah. just really unstable.
I think Garcelle exiting the show and the way she did pissed them off. And that, I think that's sort of where a lot of the heat was coming from in Watch What Happens Live. But it doesn't explain pre that. So I don't know.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need. From athletic stuff, like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
This Valentine's Day, the UPS Store Certified Packing Experts are helping pack and ship all the ways we care. From the lovey-dovey XOXO gifts for your Galentine's gal pal, even pet gifts for doggy dearest. When you ship UPS Air at the UPS Store, your items arrive on time or your money back, guaranteed at no extra cost, exclusively at the UPS Store U.S. retail locations. Send your Valentine's on time at the UPS Store. Visit the upsstore.com/airguarantee for full details. Terms and conditions apply.
To me, like, the reason why I liked Erica this season, I think that she played the middle between Kyle and Dorit extremely well, which is a very genuine position that she found herself in. And I think that she, even though I think she ultimately would have a loyalty to Kyle, I think she did a good job of, like, also still being there for Dorit in certain ways and, like, giving her very good advice, honestly, in terms, like, I think about the dinner at Kathy Hilton's house. Like, that was a really great moment for Erica. So I think that she had these really great moments that I personally don't want to like lose sight of because I think for a little bit there, I was like, is Erica ever going to get back to like a little bit more positive energy, a little more fun, a little more like endearing? And I think it was encouraging that she achieved some of that this season, even if at the very end, she lost a lot of that goodwill.
I totally agree. I genuinely totally agree.
I do want to talk about Sutton a little bit before we move on because we touched on her. She had a tough season. Sutton had a tough season. And I wouldn't be surprised if next season on Beverly Hills, we saw an extremely toned down version of her because she just knows she can't do this. She knows she won't have the backup in her best friend on the cast, Garcelle. I don't think she wants to go through this again right away. So I think that she doesn't want to be on the receiving end of Dorit and Erica again without the best friend sitting by her side. What do you make of it? What do you make of Sutton?
Yeah, I think that's definitely what she's going to aim for. I don't know that she has much of a choice. I don't think she's going to be like, well, this worked out really well for me for the cast, so let me just keep doing what I'm doing. But now I'm a solo act. I don't think that's...
What does she bring to the show if she doesn't have that, you know?
That's the question. That's the thing that is facing Beverly Hills that really will require some casting, but also because of the numbers on BH are like very small. They need more full timers. It needs to feel like more of a filled more robust ensemble. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a more robust world. But for Sutton, I don't know. Who do you choose? You're like, are you just going to be as quiet as you possibly can and play a different part than who you've been, which has been like relatively reactive, easy to trigger and provoke? Are you just going to change? Like, is that possible? I think she tried this season. She was like, let's put a ribbon on some hands and cheers to sisterhood. She did do that. She just couldn't sustain it. So I think we'll get probably a similar Sutton next season, but maybe with less support.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, there's always potential for Sutton in Erica, I guess, a little bit because they're shared sort of roots, and also in Kyle, who I think she's a very sisterly relationship with, but like, they can never sustain it for whatever reason. And, you know, as much as I love Jennifer Tilly's energy and humor, she's not going to be there for her in the deepest, darkest moments of group conflict on Real Housewives. She's just not.
Yeah. And Jennifer Tilly, talk about voice of the audience. I mean, if you're looking for someone to be a little bit more practical, it's coming from the woman with like 75 carats of diamonds in her hands. Like, it's she actually, I think, is more of the voice of the audience than anyone on her side of the couch, at least at this point. Kyle, yeah. I would have argued as a Kyle stan, would have been that person in seasons past, but I don't think that is available anymore.
Yeah. I just don't know if Jennifer has it in her to take sort of her presence on the show to the next level. You know what I mean?
She said in an interview that she's open to it. I don't want it for her.
Me either.
I want her to stay in this like really lovely space because I just don't, unless there's again a huge change on BH, but I don't trust the other couch. I don't know that that would really work out to her benefit. And as a Jeff Lewis Live listener, or I don't have a Sirius subscription currently, but as a Jeff Lewis Live, as a chump.
A chump. I was about to say, what's that word? Chump, right?
Yeah, as a chump. She was seemingly going to be a regular guest on Jeff Lewis Live, but she stopped pretty early on and was open with Jeff, who was open with us, that a big reason why she stopped going on the show was because she was really sensitive to criticism. Mm. And chumps can be extraordinarily critical. But the Beverly Hills audience, and there's crossover there, kicks it up a notch. And I just don't know if she really has. And good for her that she doesn't.
I agree.
Keep that sensitivity. Like, that's a beautiful yeah. thing. I just don't want to see her have to deal with the brunt of that if and when things turn.
Definitely. And I will say, for me, the bright spot for Sutton was the Augusta trip, because it just explained so much about her. And first of all, generally speaking, I wish they did these kind of trips more, where it's like 2 to 3 of the housewives taking sort of a mini couple day trip. Usually it's back home or something, or like for a business opportunity or something. But it really is this moment to bond in a different way and in a more intimate way. And I just loved this trip a lot. And again, it explained so much about Sutton. I think, as you said earlier, Kyle and Garcelle are pretty great friends to her on this trip. And like, particularly Garcelle, who literally told her mother, like, you should say I love you to her. And that's like, that was going out on a limb for her friend. And, you know, Garcelle could sense the energy from Reba in terms of what was coming at her, and Reba didn't show that she was fond of Garcelle for most of that trip. I don't know. I wanted to mention the Augusta trip and just talk about it briefly, just because it was a bright spot for Sutton and I understand her better now.
Yeah. I did a deep dive after the Augusta trip, 'cause I was just like crying and crying and crying, and crying. I found it really moving, and not to take back everything that I said, but this was the thing with the reunion. It felt like an especially bumpy ride. And I don't know how much of this is my own projection versus like the reality of the situation, or just noting it's probably very complicated. But like, my hope would be that Erica, who said this, like, I understand mm-hmm. Sutton and her trauma a little bit more, that there really could be a connection there.
Totally.
Erica's saying, like, Reba reminds me of my grandmother, like the steel magnolias, but also there was a consequence of that. And it's the next generation and then the next generation and the people dealing mm-hmm. with them in the present. Like, that's something that they really genuinely could bond over. And I completely think Sutton made the right call in having Garcelle and Kyle there. I think Erica would have been the absolute wrong move because there's no trust between them. It wouldn't have made sense. It would have felt more manufactured had Erica been the pick. But there's also promise there, like, because Erica does understand it.
And totally.
We've heard about her life, but like, we could hear about more. And her mom was there this season, made a cameo this season. So there is the potential for hope there.
I totally agree. Let's talk about Bose quickly in terms of what she brought to the show. Just fantastic casting, as you said. I mean, the moment she stepped on screen, it was just sort of like, okay, refreshing energy. Incredible charisma, great confessional game right from the jump. And you were just immediately excited in terms of what Bose could bring to Beverly Hills and sort of what she could represent for the future of the show. And generally speaking, I remain in that same headspace that I was, you know, 4 months ago. You're the same?
I'm nodding. That's helpful for an audio podcast. I'm nodding. We'll see. I mean, we'll see what happens with Bose and Dorit. Wish them the best. Dorit closing.
What do you think about the friendship?
I love that Dorit's like, I found a forever friend. And I'm thinking to myself, they're going to use that at the beginning of the season.
That
and then
flashback.
Be like, and then 4 months later, I loved Bose. I don't know how long Dorit is going to be able to play the part of like really understanding friend. Just Dorit is like one of the more self-involved housewives. Like, I actually think Erica does a better job and maybe could do a better job of listening than Dorit does. Dorit like does not understand other people's opinions and feels very forcefully that accountability is like the worst, is a sign of weakness or like you're a fraud if you acknowledge and take responsibility. And Bose is not that personality type. Bose will say in the moment and at the reunion, yeah, Dorit was trying to upset her. And she'll say that in the moment too, which is so fucking rare. I can't even tell you. I wonder how that will work if Dorit, you know, is disingenuous to Bose or isn't loyal to Bose and Bose most assuredly calls her out. I wonder how that will work.
Me too.
I don't know. I think it's great that they're close. Let's see how long that lasts.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's sort of a test for, it will be sort of a test for both of them, actually, in terms of like, you know, you're talking the talk. Are you going to walk the walk in terms of like, from Dorit's side of things, are you really going to be that good friend? Are you really going to sort of show some show that you've evolved and show that you've changed and that you can be that kind of friend? And from Bose's perspective, who's a very no bullshit kind of lady, if Dorit shows her any bullshit and she doesn't budge on sort of her loyalty at all, which I wouldn't expect from her to not budge, but like if she doesn't, then it's like, wait a second, I thought you said XYZ. And so I think all eyes will be on that friendship, actually. I really do. And you know, I loved Bose all season. Again, I'm excited for what she brought to the show. I will say that, like, I had a similar experience to Bronwyn on Salt Lake City, where, like, I really liked her for, I think more, this affected me more with Bronwyn, but slightly in the reunion with Bose, I was feeling this a little bit like of a condescending energy in terms of how she talks to some of the other women. And, like, I don't know if that's the right word. And it's like, I'm not sure if it was always landing for me. Like, she's hard to sometimes, I think, converse with for some of them, because she knows a lot and she's very smart. And I think that it's like, we know the other women can't sometimes like sort of intellectually match up with her, I think, in some ways. I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but like, there's something about the way that she was conversing at the reunion that I was like, huh, I'm not sure what to think about this.
I would have to reflect on that a little bit.
Okay.
I don't know that I saw it, and I definitely think I could see it more with Bronwyn, to be honest. Like, there's something about Bronwyn where she like quite literally puts on a vocal affect.
Yeah.
When it feels like she's sort of teaching the group. But a lot of that feels disingenuous to me. And I really like Bronwyn. I think she was excellent casting, but also there's like huge question marks that I've had about her and misinterpretation that she's just whatever. Bose, I don't know that I see that, to be honest, at this moment, but I also genuinely am so distracted by like, what the fuck with honestly, Erica, Dorit and like Kyle
okay.
points that was kind of where I would have to revisit that a little bit.
Okay.
To be honest,
I'm not calling it disingenuous. I'm just like, I just think it's, I think the other women have difficulty engaging in sort of meeting her where she is sometimes. Maybe, I don't know. It's, I have my eye on it. Let's just say that. Dorit, fantastic season. Her best ever. Like, just the most engaged we've ever seen her. Like, completely new cunty energy. I mean, that in the best way possible. Like, she had some truly, those first, like, several episodes, she had some truly, like, iconic showdowns with Kyle and Sutton, where she was, like, rattling the cigarette in the car. I mean, like, I was eating it up for so long this season, and I was, like, completely here for it. Were you taking it the same way? Like, were you eating up what she was giving us, or were you sort of more hesitant about it?
Definitely in those early episodes, especially, I was eating it with a fucking, like, supersized spoon. Yeah, no, I was dying for it. Cigarette moment, obviously. I can't believe that Andy referenced it. It was like, this was like absolute Great American History. She's like smoking in a car.
Literally.
Like, what are we teaching the, like, youth? But also, like, yeah, it's canon. It's like quite literally canon. With her arguments with Kyle, I did agree with, I think, the vast majority of what Dorit was saying.
Me too.
So that was tough for me, honestly. Because of my history of best friendship with Kyle. But I do think her arguments were extremely solid. And I think Kyle recognized that she had lost really the audience, which is why she came in with a certain level of repentance. But again, Dorit is like the fucking worst at listening and asking for forgiveness, LOL, like that would ever happen, or just really genuinely being accountable. Like, her trying to say to Sutton, son, it's your fault that I'm strongly implying you have a problem with alcohol because you were like joking during COVID and I don't understand your humor. So this is entirely on you. Like, when she used that strategy, I was like, oh God, Dorit, this is so bad.
But I will say, I read that article because I remember it being referenced on social media during the season. It doesn't read as a joke, to be honest. It doesn't. And I understand that Sutton's allowed to say things that other people aren't, but like, I do think that Sutton has, like, put a lot out there that hints at her drinking at 10 a.m. not being implausible.
I hear you. I completely understand that. The only addendum I would add is Dorit knows that Sutton does not want to be addressed as an alcoholic. So it's like pulling out things she's done in 2020 when we know, because she said over and over again, do not call me an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And you also have the benefit, LOL, of watching the trip to Augusta. Like, I don't think Dorit has like basic common sense that's associated with empathy. Like, we pull an awful lot out of Erica asking her therapist to like Google what empathy is and how you use it in a sentence. Like, she got dragged for that. But like, Dorit genuinely refuses to live a life with empathy if it means her being in any kind of area that could be considered critical. She won't do it. She's like, she might be in self-protection mode, and she's been that way for a very, very long time. I don't know the history around it. We're probably not going to get into it. Beverly Hills doesn't seem that curious, but like, she knows. So for her to come in with that, I mean, it's like, it almost makes me laugh, to be honest. Like, you understand why Sutton does not want you to say these things. And even regardless of that, you understand it upsets her. So to be like, oh, I had no idea, but also, you've said this stuff before.
She's
skipping over
it,
she totally, and it's so disingenuous.
Of course,
like, that moment was wild, but it's very Dorit. Dorit sucks.
And then, you know, in the same breath, they're acting like saying, you know, call me when your wallet fits. Like, they're acting like that was like the worst thing that's ever been said on Housewives in the history of Housewives on the reunion. Like, they were acting like Kyle was like, I was disgusted. Like, it was like, as if like she had like, I don't know, but it was, that was completely overblown in terms of the reaction to the reunion. I did enjoy her calling out Sutton several times this season. I did enjoy her calling Camille Grammer a cunt 80 times in 20 seconds. I enjoyed it. And I, you know, in some ways I can look the other way with some of this like lack of empathy stuff for her this season, just because of that personally. And I don't know what that says about me, but here we are.
She genuinely overall had a really, really great season.
Yeah.
And also, There is just something that like stays with me. Part one of the reunion when she says to Kyle, "Kyle, you have such a great relationship with like, you know, the EP, with members of production," which, yeah, we all know that that's been discussed in a critical manner for a minute. But you know that my job was never in jeopardy. There's that awkward moment where Kyle doesn't respond because like,
Kyle,
babe, we
was.
All... We all know it was, we watched the show, sweetie. It was in, I mean, listen, I know that Kyle Dunn fucked up this year, but like one of her best arguments is like the reason that Dorit changed is because she was going to get fired. So she felt like she had to. I mean, come on.
And I'm sorry. First clue was the timing of the separation announcement, which was happening at the very final stages of the contract negotiations. And then rumors that you were not going to be asked back. So like, yeah, Kyle knows shit. You know what I mean? We're not, that moment was so interesting, I thought. And Kyle, there was so much she didn't say, but she still said it, you know, by not saying it, by taking that pregnant pause. The other thing I did like from Dorit this season, the PK scenes, those dinner scenes they had, I thought, again, you know, I think with them, nothing's like ever fully real, but there was a lot of realness in those scenes. I think that sort of slipped out, and like they were, it was so clear they were not on the same page on so many different things. And the energy was so like uncomfortable at points. But like, I felt like I was watching some of the most real stuff between them as a couple that I've ever seen. And, you know, you just wind up and you're like, Dorit, you got to lawyer up, babe. Like, I know that the financial things are probably really intertwined with them. And that's maybe why they maybe, I don't know if the divorce filing will ever come. But God, it makes me nervous for her.
Oh, yeah. No, Dorit is fucked. It's not looking great for Dorit. It's a good thing, I guess, their house is maybe no longer on foreclosure because she got their last payment.
Yeah.
And you get your last payment after filming the reunion. Like, they specifically structure that in the way
that's
to,
so funny.
To
I didn't
ensure...
think about that. I didn't think about that.
Oh, yeah, she got that check and PK was like, I've decided to call the bank. It's tough at Beverly Hills because it's like,
But in some ways, Sarah, now that I'm thinking about it, it's like, and I agree, we need to like change some shit up in here, but like LA is a phony town and like, it's all about the facades and the image and like, you know, what you present and behind the scenes is very different from what we see as viewers. And that's always been the case for this industry town. And it's like, in some ways, it fits the mold of where the franchise exists in some ways, right? But there's a way to, it doesn't work on TV right now. It just doesn't. There's something that just, I don't know. But I do think that that level of phoniness is like kind of unavoidable when you're in LA.
That's a solid point. This is one of those things where it's just like, I don't know, man.
I know.
But then maybe this is the thing, though. After a certain number of years and they're 14 seasons in, they're in a like a tough position. How could they not be? This franchise has existed for 14 seasons and had incredible, incredible seasons, including several members of the current cast. Mm-hmm. But we're just in like a tough position right now. And I think the production knows that. I think like the show in quotes generally knows that. Mm-hmm. And we got to make some adjustments, but some of them might come naturally. Because again, I don't think the show works for Kyle's life anymore. I don't think it does.
Last person to talk about is Kyle. And she had a rough season, you know, with the Dorit stuff. She stormed out of Bose's spa day, took a week off filming, we know. She started off the season creating this huge boundary with, you know, that we're not talking about she who shall not be named in Morgan. Like, that was the first episode that she told the group that, you know, I guess I did appreciate her slightly higher level of openness and emphasis on slightly at the reunion when it came to this topic. But I don't feel like we got that much more from her on part three. What did you make of what we got out of her in part three, R.E. Morgan?
I think her talking about the conversation with her daughters was interesting. I personally don't know what she's telling us. Like, I don't.
Me neither.
I was going to ask you because I'm like, but I'm not a member of the LGBTQ community. So like, I don't know the subliminal messaging under this, like the dot, dot, dot. Like, I might not be picking up stuff, but I like genuinely couldn't understand what she was saying about like, she didn't know that there could maybe be more to her friendship with Morgan until after the video, but you filmed a video where you're in a extremely
relationship
kind of
in the video.
Flirty. Uh-huh. Right. So like you didn't know until after people responded to that video that maybe there could be something. Like I don't understand what she was trying to say.
Maybe she went into the video shoot and maybe she genuinely wasn't feeling romantic feelings for Morgan at that time. And then she went into it, had this really charged experience. And she was like, we're doing that to fuck with people and just kind of play into the narrative as a joke. But she walked away from that clearly feeling a little bit more heat around that, you know? And like, I was feeling the same way in terms of like the dot, dot, dot. And like, oh, like she's kind of saying a lot without saying it again. And then Andy's like, oh, that's great what they said to you. That's what my parents said to me when I came out. She's like, oh, I'm not coming out. And yeah, I don't really know what she said. That's the hard part. It's like, it's a little bit of word salad. I do think that she views it as her like being really open and that's sort of her way of doing it. But maybe it's like part of the issue. She doesn't have a label or like a word to describe what she's feeling, I guess. But like, and maybe she doesn't want to say this for Morgan's privacy, but an easy way to sort of tell us is like, has anything physical ever happened between you guys? Is it just like this like really strong emotional connection or like, have you guys hooked up? I don't know. Nobody's ever asked her that point blank, I don't think. And maybe we don't need to know. Maybe we don't deserve to know that. But like that would clarify things. Like if something's happened between them, she was never asked that.
I also am confused with the like what precipitated the conversation with her daughters.
I think it was the public narrative. That's what it sounds like to me.
Huh.
You don't think that's what it was?
No, I it's not that I don't think it. It's just there's stuff here where I'm like so confused. Because also the like conversations with the kids about the divorce versus them finding out through like TMZ and stuff, like there's stuff here that I'm just kind of like extremely confused by. And a lot of it stems from like Kyle saying she's not saying things to protect her children. But also not saying it doesn't quiet it. It just continues this thing with people saying a whole lot more because you're saying less. So it's not about quieting the conversation. You could certainly argue that it's about privacy for her kids, but then your kids are also adults. Like, at what point are you going to treat them like the adults that they are? Mm-hmm. Like, she's saying that the lesson coming out of her conversation with her daughters is like, Portia's the one who came over, hugged me. I would never be embarrassed. You know, I love you forever. Like, saying all of these beautiful things to her, like, take her at her word. If they are not asking, or maybe they are and she doesn't want to say that, for you to not share things, it feels like for Kyle, there are a lot of obstacles mm-hmm. that Kyle is telling us come between Kyle and Kyle sharing more on camera. And I'm not hearing a lot of Kyle being like, it's because I don't want to share stuff on camera. She's saying it's because Morgan doesn't. She's saying it's because she's doing it to protect her kids. And I'm not invalidating that, but I am saying like at a certain point, can we have the conversation where Kyle doesn't want to because she doesn't
want exactly.
to?
Yeah, exactly. Just if you don't want to, just own it, as Lisa Rinna used to say. And like, yeah, it's also like, okay, you're protecting Morgan, but like you can't put the cat back in the bag when she was on the show last season and she was openly talked about and you're still paparazzi with her all the time. And also the daughter's part, as you said, with the exception of Portia, who's either like 17 or 18, about to go to college, right? So she's like around that.
16, probably 16
so
and a
she's
half,
still like
a year and a half
a child. She's still a child. But the other ones are full adults living their lives. And they were all on a reality show last year for two seasons that would still exist if it didn't get canceled. And they would still very much willingly be on that sharing their lives. So like the protection of the daughters, I'm not sure I really buy that because like, also, the whole rap last spring was, why are we learning more about their separation from Buying Beverly Hills than we are from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills? So, like, that does not align for me. The daughters were reality stars until 8 months ago. So, you know, we might not see them on this show, but we're not idiots. And I love Kyle, I do, but that's just, that doesn't align for me. That doesn't track. Your daughters aren't 10 anymore.
Well, and also, we're not doing the show 10 years ago. Like, right. We understand the expectations of doing reality TV involve a certain level of reality. And the problem on Beverly Hills is, like, you get fucking penalized heavily by your cast if you dance around something that might be, you know, sensitive topic, but more closely associated with reality, where the cast is like, no, 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 we have our universe bubble. Don't pop it. Don't pop it by asking any questions. We're just supposed to hear and be here and wink at each other and giggle and laugh.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know who's going to be popping the bubble next year, but it doesn't seem to be Kyle.
Well, I think production needs to pop the bubble. You know, I think production pops the bubble. Part of my thing is like, and I've said this on the show, is like, it seems like Kyle needs to make some big decisions in her life and really kind of figure a couple things out. The separation from Mauricio, is that going to be a permanent separation? Are we going to file for divorce? Are we going to get back together? What is the Morgan of it all? Send Portia off to college and move or whatever you want to do. And I don't think she can make those decisions while she's on the show. I think that she's like so tied up in it. She's so worried about the public perception, about how it's going to be filmed for the show, about what she's going to leave off and share. And that's why I just think she should take a break from it. That's what I think. I'm just like, go touch grass, get some oxygen away from the show that you haven't had for 15 years and like figure some of this stuff out. Take some real time and sit with yourself and then come back if you figure some of that stuff out and want to be more open and feel better about it. The door would clearly always be open for her. If there's ever a time, and I'm such a proponent now of women taking breaks and then coming back to any franchise, I think it'd be really, really good for her. I really do.
Yeah, I really agree. I really do. And I think Kyle has had some really terrible seasons, and this was one of them. I think her behavior at points was like very tough to watch and genuinely manipulative. And I think she needs to put herself on pause.
And I think it's manipulative, but she doesn't realize she's being manipulative because this is what she knows, you know?
It doesn't make her, I think that makes her more manipulative.
No, totally. I think it's like subconscious in a way. Like, I think that's just like how she, for the past, again, decade and a half, like her life has been this constant churn of we're filming, we talk on and off camera. This is how it works. This is what life is like for her. You know, and like, again, she can't see the forest for the trees if she can't differentiate between what's manipulative and what's not manipulative. You know, like I don't think she knows. And that's not excusing it. That's just sort of like understanding why she is doing this kind of stuff. So closing things up here, Sarah, we've talked a lot about how the show feels broken, how it feels like it needs to realign in some ways, needs to do something different. And I know that you said that you're not a casting expert. You don't always get that right. But like, if it came down to it, what would you decide to do for this show? Like, if you were to picture Beverly Hills next season and you had some choices that you could make, what would you do?
This is like, I don't like this question.
I can answer it first if you want.
No, I think go for it.
Okay.
Go for it.
I would keep Sutton, Dorit, Erica, and Bose.
Okay.
I would tell Kyle to take a break, go figure some stuff out. Kathy, take her out.
Take her out?
Yeah. I don't think she would do it without Kyle. I don't think she would do it without Kyle either. I think that she does it. I think she does it for Kyle, personally.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. Jennifer Tilly, she can stay a friend if she wants. I think you bring Crystal back with Tracy Tudor from Million Dollar Listing. And then you add one or two more people, whether it's a friend in a full-time or what have you. I just think that, like, I think coming back would embolden Crystal in a way that she wasn't before on the show. I think that Tracy Tudor and Dorit have some built-in feuding going on that kind of disappeared, actually, now that I think about it, but that's there. And she's really good on camera. And I think Bose and Crystal would probably get along really great, but I think that would complicate things for Bose with her Dorit friendship. I think Sutton and Crystal have a really complicated relationship. I don't know. I think there would be a lot of dynamics there that I'd be interested in seeing play out. It wouldn't be a huge reset, but for me, I think it might be enough.
Okay.
That's my pitch.
I love a pitch. I love it. And we know, going off of the Valley premiere, that production is paying attention to this show. So that is, in fact, that's not even a soft pitch.
That's
a pitch directly to... That's a pitch directly to
And these
Bravo
shows share executive producers, baby.
Oh, really? Oh,
Alex Baskin works on The Valley.
Oh, I forgot. Oh, my God. LOL. You know what? The first thing I just want to say is that, like, I might have said this earlier, but we're not in New York season 13 territory. This is not a 911.
No,
like, this is
certainly not.
We're not in crisis talks. Like, some of this stuff can be, like, pretty easily resolved, genuinely.
I agree.
I've seen it on other franchises. So I just want to just say that off the top. I have mentioned before wanting Tracy back on the show. The thing that is, I don't know why this is making me laugh. Crystal coming back, I would just really hope that there's some sort of conversation with Crystal where it's like, it cannot be another season of Crystal saying stuff in confessionals and then the end of the season is like, I'm working on finding my voice. We cannot do that again. I will lose my mind.
And that's what I'm
saying. Crystal makes a... She argues a lot that she wouldn't do it, but I just
totally,
don't
but don't
know.
You think that, like, this could be perhaps an example of taking the season off benefiting somebody? She has this podcast that, like, I think she's finding her voice on. She's kind of feels more confident in my mind and just how she's carrying herself. If it translates to the show, it would be to be determined, but maybe it's false hope, but I would have hope in it. And I agree with you.
I don't know why I'm laughing.
It's because you don't agree.
Tudor thing. I think the Tracy Tudor thing is it literally like it's written in stone. Like we just need that to happen. It
like,
would be
like, come
it's
on.
So
It'd
obvious.
Be so
it's like undeniable.
Good. And she's
the only thing is she's working a lot in Dallas, though. Like she's doing a lot of real estate stuff in Texas. So I don't know what her like travel schedule looks like. But listen, they're giving Phaedra a peach for filming for an hour and a half. So if you can give us a tight 45, I think the diamond is yours, Crystal. That actually like genuinely could work, but she really does clam up. And
she does.
I don't know.
I just don't.
That's like a question between Crystal and Crystal. Mm-hmm. Do I think she wants to be back 1000%? And as you said, like that, you know, it's like, you know, that season, has it been one season or two seasons without Crystal?
One, just one.
No, once, just one. Wow,
yeah.
It feels like.
I know.
It was like 8 years
last
ago.
Year was Crystal and Anna Marie. Anna Marie.
Oh, God. How could I? It's because I've blocked that out
of
my mind.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Could that really reset the show? Yeah, that would be Kyle putting herself on pause. I don't think it's production doing that. Very clear by everyone involved that I just don't think production would. I think that would be a Kyle decision. I hope she makes it. I just never thought of Crystal with Tracy Tudor. That really is. It's a great. It's Bravo HQ. This is a really, really great idea, but I do think it's predicated on Kyle not being there.
Me too.
Because there is this unspoken power that she has that nobody else has on the show. Dorit has the benefit of history. Erica has the benefit of history. Sun has the benefit of, you know, like the amount of time they've been on the show. Although, you know, Dorit's a nightmare, so I don't know about that. But I think the power structure would change.
Yeah.
But goddamn, like Crystal, I need you to come in like opera levels. Like you don't even need a mic. Like you can project that much. Can she sustain it? Like, can she really do it?
The other way to do it for her. And I think part of the reason why she was hesitant during her three seasons on the show was protecting her family. And I don't think she wants her marriage and her family to like be part of the drama at all. So maybe Crystal comes back as a really great friend of who like is just there for all the group shit, who films with some of them one-on-one and stuff, and like doesn't have to, her family's been pretty much off limits as a friend.
So here's the thing that my immediate reaction is, I absolutely don't want that. Cynthia is excellent as a friend of. I love Cynthia as a friend of, and I think she would also work full-time, but I like fucking love her as a friend of. Crystal, I don't want her to be in a position where she feels like she can hide. And the Rob stuff, is that weird that I like didn't even think about anything relating to that when it comes to, because I really love that, like, Chris.
No, there was nothing on the show, but that was like,
oh, okay.
No, there was nothing on the show, but I think it's partially maybe the way Crystal might view it is like next season might have been her turn to like be to find something to talk about. You know what I mean? Like, she didn't want, as a housewife, eventually, it's no secret, eventually your marriage, even if there's nothing there, people try to fucking find shit, and she didn't want that. And I don't think there's anything to find with him. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it's sort of like how they were this season with Garcelle. It's like, well, why isn't it your turn to be under the microscope sort of thing?
I think this could really work. I don't want her part-time. Really need her in a full-time. And I love that she has younger kids. I love that we see her like with her family growing up. I personally fucking die for Rob. I have a
hand-drawn
illustration of Ursula because he came on the podcast and I had no idea that he conceived Ursula on Little Mermaid, who's like my like ride or die number one top favorite Disney villain, or not even villain. She's just misunderstood. She's a small business owner. She's finding her voice, much like Crystal. So but I'm not in any way likening the two. But so Ursula stares at me, and I have had moments where I come into the office and I'm like big Ursula energy when I like need to like get my shit together. I'd love to see it. I think this is a great idea, a great suggestion. Bravo absolutely is on BCC for this. It needs to happen. Like Crystal, just come in there, guns blazing, babe. And you know what? When it comes to the family stuff, there was that moment where Dorit made that like terrible, I don't even know if you would call it a joke, that Crystal expressed was a microaggression of like the child bride.
Oh, right.
So there is also that history too with Dorit. Do it. I mean, we've already.
I would still want them. I would still want them to find it. Like one or two like really exciting people.
Yes.
But like they can do that. Like every other franchise has done that pretty recently. Like that's possible in LA. It is.
And Crystal is friends with Kathy Hilton. I'm actually not ready to let go Kathy Hilton. So, and I think Crystal would have some thoughts on some
that's true.
Kathy Hilton's humor that maybe could be unpacked next season.
Yeah,
I'm here for it. I think it's a great idea.
I'm not anti-Kathy coming back. I just, I kind of figured
that
she does it for Kyle, basically. But anyway, any lingering Beverly Hills thoughts that we want to get off our chests? Or I kind of feel like we covered most of our bases today.
I just want to say once again, like super unpopular opinion, that again, I've had like a very tough, you know, couple seasons in my best friendship with her. But like Kyle, it's not that you can't change my top five. And it doesn't mean the top five, like housewives, like performance, just my top five, like the people that I happen to love. But she's always going to be there. She's as close to a lifetime appointment as a person. I love the sound of her voice. I love the six dogs. I love all of it. I love her house. Mm-hmm. I love seeing her interact with her kids. I do think that, you know, she is pretty manipulative and hasn't been called out. I do also think she is genuinely going through some stuff. I don't think at points she's like actively lying. I think she's just all of that grace that Garcelle hasn't received has all been thrown Kyle's way.
She's soaking all up.
She's gotten a lot. She's got a lot out of the show. She's put a lot into it. So love
totally.
Kyle. We'll continue to celebrate her in my mind. Please, please go on pause.
Beautifully said, Sarah. Beautifully said. Well, love having you here. Love having you back. When can people listen to Andy's Girls? Where and when? Plug the show. So good. I've been on lots of times. Do the plugs before we sign off.
Always love to have you. You know you have a special place in the Clawfest. I love our convos.
I love
our deep dives. I'm so happy to be back in the pod. You can follow me on Instagram at Dame Galley and listen to Andy's Girls wherever you listen to your favorite pods. You get eps throughout the week. You get those Tuesday, Saturday drops, but God only knows I love to also drop some stuff Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So the best way to be the first to listen to episodes is by subscribing. And it's all about the psychology behind The Real Housewives. So I liken it to a mix between C-SPAN and Ayanla Fix My Life. So similar to the conversation that we just had, you'll hear that on EG. And like 9 years in, can you believe that?
Wild. What's
wild?
Incredible run. And you're still going. You're not on pause yet, baby. Never on pause.
And I just need to say, because I always need to say it, I'm contractually obligated. # I stand for Shan.
And on that note, have a great weekend, everybody. Love you all. Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes. And subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gabe Sonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And keep up with all things Gabbing with Gabe at Gabbing with Gabe on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gabe is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.